kind of get into some of the nitty-gritty in the microsimulation modeling related to CalSim. And so keep in mind what we talked about before related to the base versus enhanced scenarios, because this analysis kind of allowed us to create those base and enhanced scenarios and have these differential levels of impact among different populations. So again, no financial relationships to disclose. In this case, the support for the analysis was provided by the California Pan-Ethnic Health Network. They're interested in looking at the eligible and enrolled populations that we're modeling and the language issues that might take place. And they used a lot of these findings to push for additional investment in more culturally competent outreach and with Covered California. So the goals of the project were really to predict both English proficiency and preferred language among, or and limitations thereof, among projected eligible Californians and potential enrollees in the various insurance markets after the Affordable Care Act expansions. So again, this is looking at 2014 through 2019. The findings relate to those years. Most of the time we report the 2019 results because they're considered more stable and are easily comparable to the numbers we've seen from Congressional Budget Office and other outside sources. So the focus of those the focus is really on those eligible for subsidized coverage in this case through Covered California. So the focus tends to be on those from 138 to 400% of federal poverty level that are likely to get tax credits and potentially take advantage of those tax credits. And so we compared take-up rates with or without a limited English proficient effect. There's been several research projects and one article that really quantified the gap in response to insurance coverage when you have a limited English proficient population in Latinos and Asians that we used as the underpinning for this adjustment. And then we want to make sure we were able to provide recommendations to maximize enrollment of those LEP individuals. So first I want to go over why we need to account for limited English proficiency. with the idea that people of color in California represent about 60% of California's population. They're disproportionately part of that nearly 7 million Californians who are uninsured, and disproportionately, of course, they're limited English proficient, with about 7 million Californians also LEP. There, Kaiser and other polling sources have provided some information recently around the fact that limited English proficient populations and people who speak other languages than English are less informed about the Affordable Care Act's benefits. You know, some legal permanent residents might think that they're not actually entitled to coverage expansions. Even though they're locked out of Medicaid, they could be potentially in the Affordable Care Act's expansion of tax credits in the exchange. And so the understanding of that is a barrier. And then, of course, language barriers also likely impact participation in public programs, and that's been proven over the years as well. So in terms of our definition of English language proficiency, we used the AHRQ definition, which is basically that for healthcare issues, individuals who report speaking English less than very well are potentially limited English proficient. So this is you know, sometimes you'll see limited English proficient populations as those who report well or above. In this case, if you just reported well in the California Health Interview Survey, we anticipated that you would be somewhat limited English proficient, and because you're speaking a different language at home as your preferred language, and you kind of reported in the middle of the spectrum on limited English proficiency. And there's been some support for the idea that when it comes to complex issues like healthcare and medical care, that definition is more appropriate. So first, there's kind of a two-stage process here where we had to not only model whether people were limited English proficient in the case that there was missing data for this population, we also then had to model what the effect would be on a limited English proficient population in relation to their likelihood of taking up coverage through the exchange or through Medi-Cal. So the core set for CalSim, the core data set, is the Medical Expenditure Panel Survey household component, and it does not contain any data on English proficiency. In more recent years, I think from 2006 on, it actually reports comfort level with speaking English, but doesn't report actual that same definition of limited English proficiency. So we used that as a proxy for LEP and basically just defined anyone who said they were uncomfortable speaking English from the medical expenditure panel survey analysis as a limited English proficient individual. For those in the CALSIM model, we pool multiple years of medical expenditure panel survey data. So in some cases, we were lacking responses on this variable going back previous years before they added that question. And we also lacked information on whether people spoke a language other than English at home, and we also had to impute that response. So we used a probabilistic model from the California Health Interview Survey in 2009 to basically figure out what the drivers of predictors were of being limited English proficient. We then applied that model to predict the likelihood of each individual MEPS respondent for being limited English proficient, which is a very similar process to what we use to calculate undocumented residents. So we use, as Shana pointed out, we use the California Health Interview Survey variables on undocumented status to model what are predictors of being undocumented in California. We then apply that model to the medical expenditure panel survey because it lacks an undocumented variable. So these are the two basically, you know, multivariately imputed variables within MEPS that we then reweight to look like California. So we used a logistic regression model with binary 0-1 limited English proficiency status as our dependent variable. And we modeled language spoken at home, the language of the survey interview, which is available in CHIS, race, ethnicity, educational level, and age at which the individual moved to the U.S., if not U.S. born, as well as gender, income, employment status, firm size. A question in CHIS from 2009, the ability to understand primary care provider, which I think subsequently has been removed. And then immigration status, that same four-category variable that Shana laid out before, which includes a variable for non-green card population, which is a proxy for undocumented. So we applied that model to each respondent in MEPS, and each adult was randomly assigned a limited English proficient status with the predicted probability estimated from that model's parameters. And then we additionally used that information to then inform whether or not somebody should be labeled as limited English proficient and therefore have a higher degree of difficulty of signing up and understanding insurance information based on this article from Alegria et al. From 2006 that states that the limited English proficient population, specifically Latinos and Asians, are less likely to sign up for public coverage when it's offered to them even though they're eligible. And then, of course, we reweight that MEPS data set to the California Health Interview Survey distribution so that our final model looks very much like the same benchmarks in terms of population and mix of population from the California Health Interview Survey. So to give you a sense of what the results looked like, the among those, so first looking at the eligibility for Medi-Cal and the subsidized exchange. So this is very similar to Shana's original table where we're just looking at the cuts of population, whether they're undocumented or not, and what their income levels are to get at, and whether they have existing insurance coverage or whether they're currently uninsured to get at the eligible population for various coverage types. Now, an important thing to mention here, of course, is that in California and in any other state that expands Medicaid, there's no prohibition on somebody who's offered affordable employer-based coverage under the ACA going into Medicaid and using that insurance instead to both meet their individual mandate requirement and have affordable insurance. The employer in that case is not penalized if somebody goes into Medicaid versus if somebody goes into the exchange and using subsidies. The subsidy is what triggers the penalty in the case of many of the firms. So we have a large employer-based population that potentially could sign up for Medicaid because they're at this low income level. So among those who are Medi-Cal slash Healthy Families eligible in 2009, when we turned them into a 2013 data set, they now represent this new Medi-Cal population that's from 0 to 250% of FPL for kids and 0 to 138% of FPL for their adult parents or for the childless adult population. So there are about 5.3 million people that fit into those categories, including those who are previously eligible for Medi-Cal, who are non-elderly but have gone unenrolled. So this could include parents of kids. It could include siblings of children who are technically eligible for Medi-Cal but just haven't signed up, or were eligible for Healthy Families and hadn't signed up. But about 75% of that 5.3 million is minority, with about 55% being Latino, almost 3 million people. Then we look at the subsidized exchange. It's about 2.7 million total in the eligible population, with 47% being Latino, representing almost 1.5 million people, with the subsidized exchange population from 138% up to 400% of federal poverty level, as well as those who are legal permanent residents for less than 5 years, but they're lawfully here, who are allowed into the exchange from 0 to 138% of FPL with tax credits. So they're not, they will temporarily be put into the state-based Medicaid expansion until the state figures out how to issue wraparound payments to the exchange. So actually, those folks aren't eligible for Medi-Cal in the state-funded model. They would be eligible for exchange subsidies, even though they're extremely low income, under 138% of federal poverty level. And that, so they're about 47% falling into that Latino category, and then 66% are minorities. So again, it's a, you know, lower income minority, more likely to be LEP eligible population. Now, if we look at limited English proficiency, it works out to about 40% in each category is limited English proficient, with 60% being proficient in both. So if we were to look at our base model, which basically models the LEP effect. So it's important to think about, in our base model, we're looking at what happens to people if you just let things work out naturally and you don't do anything special for that limited English proficient population. What would their response be to these health insurance coverage options available to them? And you can see that the percent LEP take-up rates are lower among those who are projected to be non-elderly enrollees and take advantage of these subsidies and the Medi-Cal expansion that's available. So if we were to, so in essence what we wanted to do is inform this idea of the enhanced model, where if you were to turn off the LEP adjustment and say, okay, well, we're going to do no wrong door enrollment, things in a culturally competent manner for limited English proficient populations, and the limited English proficient population then got an upgrade, in essence, to their response because of the fact that they were being targeted for enrollment, what would then happen? So the difference is between using that, having that LEP effect of being less likely to take advantage of coverage, then being removed from the model, and then we're able to estimate what the enhanced model would look like, where all of the outreach and enrollment efforts hopefully overcame those barriers, and they had just as much of a likelihood of signing up for coverage as somebody who didn't have limited English proficient status. In addition, in combination with all of these elements of limited English proficiency, we're also using the enrollment decision is also based on income, the cost of the premiums offered to people. So in Medi-Cal, it could be much lower or non-existent. The presence of a chronic condition making people more likely to sign up, the presence of being old or aged making people more likely to sign up. So we're modeling all these factors simultaneously, but LEP we kind of isolated to alter the base and enhanced scenario to get a better idea of what would happen if enrollment was done in a more equitable way. So here you can see that with this targeted outreach, even among the population, you expect about a 10% increase in the percentage of people who actually take up in the exchange. So this is the subsidized exchange specifically. And so with targeted outreach, you're getting rid of that LEP effect. Without targeted outreach, you're including the LEP effect that we know diminishes someone's odds of signing up for insurance. So you see about a 119,000 person difference among the 1.1 million people who are eligible for subsidized exchange who happen to be documented and eligible. So under those ideal conditions of effective outreach enrollment, 56% of the eligible LEP individuals would be expected to enroll, whereas only 46% would be expected to enroll without that LEP factor turned off in the model. To give you a sense of the languages that are being spoken, as I mentioned before, the remaining uninsured are likely to be 80% Spanish-speaking, but in the overall population estimate coming from CHIST 2009, you can get a better idea of exactly which languages are being spoken and at what levels, 73% being Spanish, Mandarin is 5%, Cantonese 6%, Vietnamese 5%. So it's important to note that anybody over 5% is probably hitting that threshold language requirement that health plans and Covered California would have related to doing active interpretation and translation. Other populations, Tagalog, Korean, may not fall into that category depending on where you are. So in LA County, Korean probably falls above the threshold language requirement, and there needs to be a specific plan by the health plans and Covered California for dealing with them and Medi-Cal, whereas in other counties, Korean isn't a requirement for those health plans. So depending on where you live, you may not have, even though it's a substantial portion of the population, you may not have the same types of resources available to people. So in terms of recommendations, proactive planning for both the Medi-Cal expansion and the exchange is, of course, very important. The exchange has been involved in issuing communication and outreach grants with a focus on providing those grants to organizations that have histories of dealing with limited English proficient, low-income, kind of disenfranchised populations. This has drawn some criticism. I've seen some people say, well, the exchange population goes up to 400% of FPL with the subsidy, and you're funding a lot of organizations that have a very long history of dealing with Medi-Cal beneficiaries. So you're focusing on the wrong population. But I would probably argue that we know people higher on the income spectrum probably are less likely to be limited English proficient, less likely to go through a community organization to sign up for coverage in the first place, and really the grants are going to those organizations that have good connections to those populations, because those populations have often been held out of coverage before because they're lower income, they don't have enough information in their own language, and there weren't programs available to them that they can now take advantage of, and they need more explanation and getting communication and culturally appropriate messaging. So there's been quite a bit of investment in community organizations. They've issued about $37 million in grant funds to about 41 different organizations. There's also a provider education outreach campaign. One of the organizations chosen was the Pacific Islander Asian provider organization that got close to $1 million to do provider-focused education for doctors providing care for this client population. In addition, you'll see if you go to the Covered California website that despite having a Spanish language version of Covered California, they also issue five different fact sheets in multiple languages that basically cover all the ones that I laid out in the last slide. However, there's not a specific language-appropriate website for every single one because, resources are fixed. So really it may be more important for these limited English proficient populations to be getting signed up through these in-person application assisters or through insurance agents. And one of the holdups currently is that the 3-page plus 30 pages of instructions application hasn't yet been approved by CMS. So there's an English one online with a draft watermark on it. And once it gets approved, they will then translate it into all the threshold languages and Spanish. And if you're relying on certified enrollment counselors that speak this native language or certified insurance brokers who also speak the language to sign people up, it'll be really important to have that paper application because it'll probably be a longer process to talk someone through all these instructions in an English version. And of course, a lot of the certified enrollment counselors, outreach workers, are also first language other than English, and that's part of these outreach campaigns. And so their ability to interpret the instructions and explain it and put things in the correct words will be contingent upon having those materials as well. In terms of proactive measures, other elements are, of course, the same transitions I talked about before with family-packed aid to infants and mothers, low-income health programs being effectively transitioned over. Current state legislation basically says that the food stamp folks will be getting a mailer that says you might now be eligible for Medi-Cal. You've already been in our eligibility system. Here's how to try to go sign up. But there hasn't been an aggressive push to move all these people administratively through auto-enrollment into Medi-Cal, except in the case of those low-income health programs, which are in 53 different counties out of the 58 in the state. They represent about 590,000 to 600,000 people who are point-in-time currently enrolled in a low-income health program and definitely fall into the Medicaid eligibility thresholds and will be transitioned over. A lot of them do come with limited English proficient backgrounds and represent a sizable Latino population as well as African-American populations and in certain rural counties, you'll have a very high white population, like the 34 county consortium that makes up the county medical services program. In terms of targeting assistance, you know, there's only so much one can do proactively, but targeting assistance to limited English proficient populations will be really important. Putting investment into training more culturally competent certified enrollment counselors will be important, and also using marketing outlets, outreach entities that are trusted by the culturally and linguistically, you know, non-English speaking population will be important as well. So with that, I will close, and I'll take any questions you have.
Thank you. Questions specific to this presentation?
Right, but then once, so yes, so we used, in the case that, so yes, we did include language as a predictor simply because, well, so remember LEP population, the only people who get the LEP question are those who don't speak English, and MEPS has a preferred language or language variable as well, and so that was our we had to match the CHIS model variables to the MEPS variables because MEPS lacked an LEP variable. So in essence, we were validating whether preferred language predicted LEP, which of course you will get simultaneity, but then we're taking that model, putting it into MEPS, and saying, tell us who is likely to be LEP. And in that case, you actually want simultaneity, right? Because we don't know who is actually LEP, and we want all of these independent variables together predicting this variable we don't actually know the value of in MEPS. Right, so it's similar to the undocumented equation where we say, okay, if you're not born in the U.S., you have a much higher likelihood of being undocumented. We know that, but because MEPS lacks a variable for undocumented status, we have to impute that using this model. So I'll assume no one else wants to talk about microsimulation, and we can get into broader issues about health reform.
Yeah, why don't we use the last 5 minutes or 10 minutes to open it up to just general questions about vulnerable populations and about any of the findings. And I'm happy to entertain questions that are not California-specific as well. So. Yes, you had.
This is sort of addressed to everybody. For the last 3 years, I've been trying to get a policy through ADA saying that undocumented immigrants should not be excluded from the ACA.
Mm-hmm.
And it's come up with, and also that the 5-year delay should be gotten rid of. I'm not.
Well, even if no one volunteers immediately, maybe you should stick around afterwards or make your contact information available, either email or whatever. There may be somebody who wants to do it who's unwilling to say so right now.
Right.
But, I agree with you. I think that it's an important cause. I mean, this is an organization that has stood for social justice for decades, and it seems like this is an issue This is the most significant expansion of health insurance in our lifetimes, or at least in our recent lifetimes. For this aspect, which is just punitive, there's no other word for it, and it's a concession to conservatives in the House and Senate, to go without a formal statement of opposition from this organization seems inappropriate.
Can I make a comment on that also? I commend you for what you're trying to do, and I completely agree with what you just said, but one of the things that surprised me at that international conference I went to, which was my first international conference, I'm a pretty junior faculty, and it was my first experience really talking directly with people who work within the health systems that I've always heard are universal health systems. There were entire sections and presentations on undocumented immigrants being left out of our health system. They all do that too, and it's, or at least the ones that I heard, and these were, you know, major developed countries that all leave out. There was a presentation from Norway who was talking about this incredibly huge undocumented population from Finland as a big problem. So,
Having just come back from Finland, those Finns, you have to be careful. I mean, they're just crossing borders looking for handouts.
So I agree with you that as a public health organization, it is a absolutely great moral stand to take. And from a public health perspective and a human perspective, it makes a lot of sense. From a political perspective, it's a very uphill climb. Mm-hmm. Because even in universal health systems, they still exclude the undocumented in their own countries.
Right.
So,
and it may be that, you know, there is this policy window potentially closing. Janet's throwing ice on the policy window. But, you know,
figuratively and literally.
Reform passed through the Senate, sitting in the House, may never make it out until the next presidential election.
Yeah.
But, you know, they were pretty clear about you spend 8 years in this legal provisional status where you actually have to comply with the mandate, but you're not allowed to do it through exchange subsidies. And then after that 8-year waiting period, you would then be a legal permanent resident with a green card if you waited in line, paid your dues, and nobody else was in line in front of you, and our wall was built, or whatever the secure border was built. Then you have to wait for 5 years, then you get Medicaid. So it's this 13-year-long process, and I think that may be, you know, APHA is certainly paying attention to that. You know, they come out with their legislative updates. And I think that may be where you kind of fit into the debate, because it's not just an issue of we need to change federal regulations about whether matching funds are available for those not meeting the eligibility bar, but it becomes this broader issue that's already being discussed. And if immigration reform comes back up in the House, I think that's an important issue to focus on, because if there is a requirement for people to buy insurance, but they can't, they have to use their own money to do it, and by foregoing insurance, they're technically breaking the law that then sets them back on their legal provisional status and doesn't enable them to get the green card, that's even more punitive than saying you don't have to pay the penalty.
Mm-hmm.
So making sure that group is protected in the final version of the bill, whatever it may be, will be really important.
I think that, a lot of the efforts to try to address the undocumented question of lack of coverage is more at the state level.
Mm-hmm.
Try to deal with it at the state level, where states may have the ability to use state funds to cover those populations somehow, as opposed to, you know, the federal proposal is so much more difficult to, you know, to accomplish the, by going to.
So we have a.
I don't have to ask this group.
I actually would like to. I have a general question concerning the study. So I work for UCSF as
yes.
The director of the family tax evaluation. So I'm housed in Sacramento, and it's really great to have all the documents, resources, website, and the analysis that you produce. I was wondering whether it's possible for you to do similar analysis for other states. They don't have something like CHIP data.
Correct.
So that might be a big limitation, but so I'm not sure whether you ever thought and what kind of states you could potentially foresee to do similar comparative analysis.
I'll let Dr. Roby answer that question.
Well, first, I don't know if I want to answer, because you just stole one of our programmers, Kevin Kong, from us, and we're still upset about it.
Okay, now that that's out of the way. now that we've cleared the air.
So because we use this federal data source as the underpinning with medical expenditure panel survey, we have been able to do state-level analyses and kind of adapt the model to deal with other states. So right now we're doing the Hawaii simulation model with ISIM, where we use the Hawaii Health Survey as well as CPS data to reweight the mess to look like Hawaii. In that case, we have to use national data sources for insurance offering and then insurance information from regulatory bodies. In Hawaii, that's fairly easy to come by because they have their own, you know, employer mandate and they have a very highly regulated insurance market. In other states, it's not as easy to come by. So yes, we do different state analysis. Hawaii is the first example. We're hoping we'll have the opportunity to do the same thing in Vermont and other states as well. Because I think our job now isn't to tell people what's going to happen in 2014 because it's almost here. It'll be what will the impact be to your current health insurance market in the future based on all the new provisions, and how will it change if, you know, Paul Ryan is president and wants to raise the eligibility age to Medicare to 67 and those people are then shifted into the exchange. What happens if you as a state decide to take advantage of the Section 1332 authority and become a single payer plan that meets all the requirements of the ACA but does it in a different way? So I think there are lots of opportunities out there to figure out as states are deciding, do we become an active purchaser? Do we use this waiver authority? Do we use state funding to supply care for the undocumented population where we could step in and provide pretty good evidence?
But and also just to follow up on Dylan's response, the fact that we've got national surveys that provide for many states or in some cases for all states, at least some good population and insurance data, it is possible for us to modify our model to do these kinds of estimates. We benefit in California from having CHIST because we've got a richness in the data set. I think you saw illustrated in the presentations today that we're able to deal with issues on limited English proficiency and undocumented status in California that just is not possible using national data sets alone. So any of the other sort of simulation models that rely solely on national data are not going to have that richness that we benefit from by having CHIST. But we simplify our model and not look at all of these other sort of important issues in California, we can make modifications to do this analysis in other states.
Yeah,